this episode of Dan Marcus's Wax Museum. I'm thrilled to have on the phone with me right now a man who has, well, been a survivor in the rock and roll industry, and we'll get into that in a second. Jim Peterick from the Ides of March and Survivor. Jim, how are you today?
I'm great, Dan, and I want to say right up front, thank you for having me on your show, Wax Museum. That's very cool. And I have to say, I'm of the Ides of March and formerly of Survivor.
That's fair.
I left Survivor in 96 and really went full force with the Ides of March. You know, as much as I love those days of, you know, that I was with Survivor, basically spanned from 77 to 96. Those were some magical times, but it's really nice to be back with my family at the Ides of March, and that's really where I cut my teeth.
We're thrilled to have you on the Dan Marcus Wax Museum because you've got an interesting history, and I'm going to pull some names out of the hat, and let's see if I can make you go, oh, wow, once or twice, okay?
Oh, wow. Oh, okay, go ahead.
No, don't rehearse that.
Not yet.
Okay. Jim, Chicago band and out of the Midwest, and when you first formed a band, you were in your teens, right?
Right.
And a bunch of high schoolers, I imagine, that got together and just wanted to be able to pick up some chicks. Yeah? No?
You know, pretty much, Dan. I mean, you know, we were the nerds. We were in the high school band, the Ides of March were. I played saxophone, Bob was on clarinet, Larry was on percussion, Mike was on drums. We're all the nerds. I mean, you know, marching band, you know, at the halftime of the football games.
Me too, brother. Me too.
Right? And the cheerleaders would give us no attention, and the jocks thought we were, you know, nerds. And, boy, you know what? Have one hit record, and suddenly you're invited to the front table.
Yeah. Of course, Vehicle, being the huge hit that it was, it spent a couple of weeks at the number two spot on the Billboard charts in America. I know it was number one in several overseas countries.
But yes.
I'm curious, do you know what song or songs kept Vehicle out of the top spot?
I do.
I figured you would. And they are?
I'll never forget the one song that kept us away, American Woman by the Guess Who.
Oh, sure. Okay.
At least we lost to a good song.
Well, yeah. Do you still hold the grudge?
You know, it's funny. I never really did. It was just like, you know, on Cashbox, we were number one, so we held on to that.
Yeah. But have you played with the Guess Who? My guess is you've opened for them or they've opened for you at some point.
Well, a funny story is that when we opened for Led Zeppelin back in 70, who was in the audience but Burton Cummings and Randy Bachman?
Oh.
And later on, many years later, I ran into them in Nashville, and they said, you guys were great. You blew Led Zeppelin off the stage.
Oh, that's high praise coming from those two.
I'm telling you, and that was a magical night. We just could do no wrong that night, and we were even invited to a party at Led Zeppelin's penthouse that night, and we walked in, and it was nothing but debauchery like we had never seen. I'm 19 years old at the time, and we're seeing stuff that, you know, I'm looking at Larry. We're looking at each other. What is going on?
That's awesome.
We're kids from Berwyn, you know? And
Well, I know there was one other concert that was just awesome for you. And I know that you met a girl at a Turtles concert.
Oh, boy. Now, there's the concert that changed my life.
Yeah.
You know, and like I said, I was very shy in high school before I really had success. And I wanted to see the Turtles. They were my favorite group at the time.
And for those who don't know, Turtles did Happy Together, She'd Rather Be With Me, Eleanor G, I Think You're Swell, just as a reference point. Go ahead.
And You, Baby. Anyway.
Yes.
And so many more. So I went alone. I had a car by this time. I was 17. And I had a 1964 Valiant, Plymouth Valiant, push-button drive. Pretty cool.
Cool.
And I drove to Riverside Brookfield High School where the Turtles were to perform. And I got there really early because it was open seating. And I was there at 6:15, and I see this gaggle of girls. And a gaggle is anything more than three. And there was four of them.
Okay.
That's the official gaggle. Anyway, and there was this one girl that was just gorgeous, and they were all gorgeous, but she had a light in her eyes.
And what was she wearing?
She was wearing orange culottes, a white blouse, knee socks, and saddle shoes.
I knew you'd know. Okay, keep going.
Yeah, and she was a Catholic school girl, you know. I think she came right from school. I don't know, but
yeah.
She had this amazing outfit on. And I keep looking at her, and I said, well, to myself, this girl is way out of my league. And all of a sudden, she turns to me and says, aren't you Jim Peterick? I go, last time I looked, yeah.
Oh, good answer, Jim.
Yeah. And she says, I just saw you guys the Ides of March last month. You opened for the New Colony Six. You guys were great. And I said to myself, there is a God. And we just started talking, and we sat together watching the Turtles play Happy Together. We fell in love, and it was just 47 years later, that girl is still my wife.
That's amazing. That is just amazing. What a happy ending for you. And yeah, no wonder you remember that concert.
Oh, yeah.
She also played a role in the song Vehicle, did she not?
Well, yeah. Now you're getting into the real minutia of the story.
Yeah.
Soon after we met, about a year after we met, she dumped me. And I was heartbroken, of course. And I was disconsolate. You know, the eyes were going, what's wrong? I said, well, you know, you get dumped one day. You'll see what you're talking about. And I, all of a sudden, she starts calling me again. About 6 months of being broken up. And, Jim, you know, you got that really nice car, that Valiant. And I need a ride to modeling school. Can you drive me? She said, it's not a date, though. Don't get any. And I said, that's okay. At least I can be next to her and smell her perfume, you know.
And hope she wears those culottes. You bet. Okay.
Yeah, just wear those culottes. No. So I picked her up, you know, to drop her off at Patricia Stevens Modeling School. Wait outside for an hour and a half. She comes out. Hi, Jim. I drive her home. No kiss. No, just a handshake. Thanks, Jim. That was a lot of fun. Well, that happened 4 times. Oh. Suddenly, I'm thinking, all I am is your limousine service, baby. All I am is your vehicle.
Wow.
And I heard this horn like in the ether. Ba-da-ba-ba-da. You know, it just called out to me. And I started the lyric, you know, I'm the friendly stranger, the black sedan, won't you? Should have been a white sedan, but that's okay.
Yeah.
Would you hop inside my car? You know, and I taught it to the band. And, man, I'll tell you, we started playing it at dances all around Chicagoland. And the place would go crazy when we played this song. Like, they already knew it, but it was brand new. And we went into CBS Studios in Chicago, cut it in 2 takes. And it was a really just a magical time.
Yeah.
And it came out on Warner Brothers. It became the fastest number one song or number two in Billboard in Warner Brothers history.
Wow.
And that's when we hit the road with Janis Joplin and Led Zeppelin, Grateful Dead, Poco, Jimi Hendrix. What a year to have a number one record, right?
You went from obscurity to touring with some of the elite bands of the time instantly, overnight.
Overnight. All it takes is one, you know, top 10 record. And we were really good live, always have been. Anyway, guess who starts calling me again?
Yeah.
Miss Culottes. And she said, you know, Jim, maybe I was a little hasty. You know, that's a great record you got out there. You know?
Oh, no.
And you know what, Dan? Nothing succeeds like success. And yeah. She said, maybe we should try dating again. Well, I let her hang on that line for at least 3 seconds. And I said, sure. No problem. Let's do it. And soon after that, we got engaged, started making wedding plans. And
wow.
Like I said, 47 years later, man, I'm still her vehicle.
You are still married to her. And Karen is a lucky woman for that. And she made the right decision, don't you think?
Well, I'm a lucky guy.
When Vehicle came along and that brass just absolutely riveted me, I instantly fell in love with the song, as did millions of others. It had this big brass sound, which was pretty new at that point, but it had this lead singer voice, and he sounded, I mean, it was this gravelly voice at, hey, I'm the friendly stranger in the black sedan. Almost sounded like some kind of character in one of those bad B-movie black and white flicks, you know? He sounded like Rocco or somebody.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny. I'm 19 years old. I weighed about 130 pounds at the time.
Yeah.
And And yet I was channeling this other guy, and I didn't smoke, didn't drink, nothing. But I idolized two people vocally, and one was Ray Charles,
sure,
and the other was David Clayton Thomas.
Okay.
Blood, Sweat, and Tears. And I really kind of channeled that sound. It's really funny because my manager said, quit trying to be David Clayton Thomas. Just be Jim Peterik. And I said, I am.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it worked. It definitely worked. And that voice and the arrangement behind that voice and the lyrics, I'm the friendly stranger in the black sedan, I instantly am picturing a car more sinister than the Green Hornets, you know?
Yeah.
Something that was just absolutely, it was a boat going down the Stevenson Expressway, black and some kind of really cool upholstery in it, and I knew it was a makeout pit. What was that car really, Jim?
Well, like I said, it was quite bland. It was a white 1964 Plymouth Valiant, and you know, it was just really a slant six engine, you know. And but you know, for me, that was my Ferrari. You know,
it was your dad's car.
It was my cousin's car who passed away, and I bought it for $300, and the best deal I ever made.
Are you telling me you still have that car?
No, oh. I don't. I wish I did, but it was a great car. And the next car I got was, then I started making some dough.
Yeah.
And I bought it the first year of the Datsun 240Z, you know, the two-door coupe.
Sure, Datsun, yeah.
Yeah, and funny story, we're in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, playing a pop festival, and I wandered into a car dealership that was selling Datsuns because I really wanted one. But in Chicago, there was a wait list of like 6 months. Well, this place in Baton Rouge had one on the floor, and it was for sale. But I came in there with my hippie hair and my fringe jacket, and the guy, he just laughed at me. And I said, I want that car. And he goes, yeah, kid, sure. Well, I went back to the hotel, and I got $3,900 cash, and I bought it. And he's still shaking his head. I had
great.
It shipped back to Chicago, and that was such a great, great car.
Oh, I'll bet. We're talking with Jim Peterik of the Ides of March. Before Vehicle, there was a nice little pop song that is still one of my favorites. Relatively obscure, but I love You Wouldn't Listen to Me.
Wow. Now, there's a wow, because I love that song.
Me too.
Thank you. That was the first release we had. It was on Parrot Records.
Yep.
And we were label mates of the Zombies and Tom Jones and Engelbert, and everybody thought we were from Britain. And mm-hmm. at the time, Morton West High School would not allow hair on guys that would go over their collar. And we bought wigs. And so, I mean, and these were great wigs. I mean, these were not cheap wigs, human hair, you know. And we started touring with these wigs. I got photos of it, and we looked like the Zombies or something, you know.
Cool.
Yeah, it was really a trip. But at a point, you know, we toured Florida that year in 66. We toured with the Allman Brothers, which at that time were called the Allman Joys.
Wow.
But it was so damn hot in Florida, those wigs came up really quick.
were you still accepted, though?
They accepted us. One time I took a bow and my wig fell off. It was very embarrassing. And that was in Wisconsin, dude.
Really?
That was in Watertown.
Watertown, Wisconsin, sure.
Yep.
Now, being from Chicago, you had just what a great launching pad for the tri-state area of Indiana, Illinois, and Wisconsin. You played all over those three states, didn't you?
Oh, man. You know, and Wisconsin was really ground zero for us, besides Chicago. I mean, we were Oshkosh, Appleton, Green Bay, Sturgeon Bay, Watertown, Thiensville. Oh, my God. We played constantly. Father Cornell, who was the priest behind Sturgeon Bay and Green Bay, loved us. He used to give us tips when we were done.
Wow.
Wisconsin was our second home.
Well, to your credit, you still remember the people who helped you launch, and that's good for you. Good for you.
Yeah, sure do.
You caught lightning in a bottle with Vehicle, but perhaps as much as I love Vehicle, I love, for different reasons, L.A. Goodbye.
Oh boy, there's another reason I like Dan Marcus, because
thank you.
That's such a good, I mean, the real true Blue Eyes fans love that song. And, you know, in Chicago, they play that as much as Vehicle. You know, it's just always on the airwaves. It's a beloved song here.
Deservedly so. It's a great song. There's a little touch. What are the influences in that? I would say there's a whole bunch of America, the band, in there. Anybody else?
Yeah. Well, actually, we wrote that before America came out with Horse With No Name. We were really influenced by Crosby, Stills, and Nash at that time.
I hear that. I hear the harmonies especially, yeah.
Yep. And that blend that we had.
And it's acoustic. It's kind of primarily acoustic, yeah.
It is. I'm on acoustic. Larry's on this very Buffalo Springfield kind of tremolo electric, but nothing hard. Very, very soft, you know. Okay. And now I feel light years away from the west side of Chicago. every time we say that line, the whole audience applauds, you know.
Yeah.
It's just very dear.
It is. It's an enormous song and just an important song for the band. You co-wrote that, did you not?
No, that's mine.
That's all yours. Okay.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. People, let's get into your songwriting here for a second, because first you were writing songs for the Eyes of March, and then when Survivor happened and you helped launch Survivor, you wrote a lot of hits for Survivor and then for artists like 38 Special. You've got some chops, my friend.
Well, songwriting is really my favorite thing, I think, but I couldn't really do it without the live element of my career. You know, I mean, these guys in Nashville, and I love Nashville, and I go down there quite a bit, but they sit in a cubicle all day long, and they write songs.
Yeah.
And that's fine. I couldn't just do that. I need to get out in the street, get out in the dance floors, and see what the people are digging, and carry that inspiration back to my house, and I write better songs, because, you know, I'm using the inspiration of the live thing. So it really is both, you know, that keeps me going.
Okay. With Survivor, let's talk about a couple of hits there. Obviously, we have to talk about Eye of the Tiger from Rocky III. How did you come to form that song?
Wow, really good story. I mean, first of all, Survivor was a big deal around Chicago in 78. We played all the clubs. We really got a following. And in Wisconsin, you know, we played those 18 bars, they call it. You could drink it at age 18.
Yep.
And we were very popular right over the border of Illinois to all these clubs. But, you know, we couldn't seem to get arrested with a record deal. And so we're building a following. And we went into the studio and we cut a demo. Boy, that demo was out there for a year and we couldn't get any interest from record companies. And then finally, somebody knocked on our door, called us up, and the fellow's name was John Kolodner. He worked for Atlantic Records. And I had met him a few years earlier when I was shopping my own solo deal. And he said, I'd like to come to Chicago. You guys got any more hits like that one on your demo called Somewhere in America? And I said, hell yeah. And of course we had to write them, but anyway.
Yeah, nice bluff.
Real quick. So he came out and we rented SIR Studios and we auditioned for John Kolodner, and we played him this one song that I had just written called 2020, which is a good year, by the way, but that was talking about that was talking about eyesight, not the year, but anyway.
Okay.
And so he loved the song. He made us play it five times. And he finally, at the end, he said, I'm signing you guys. Whoa. And we were just like jumping up and down.
Yeah.
You know, and he took us to Nick's Fish Market and wined and dined us. And we were living the dream, right?
Yep.
So the first album came out. It's the one with the really cute picture of Kim Basinger on the cover, and we're standing in front of a smoking wreckage of a bombed out plane, like we're survivors, get it?
Right.
And the album came out, and Somewhere in America didn't do great, but it got people's attention. Then we put on another song on that album, I can't remember which. And then second album comes, Premonition, a better album, but again, Summer Nights got some traction, but Poor Man's Son made it to 45 on the Billboard charts.
Okay.
And it apparently caught the attention of someone named Sylvester Stallone.
Oh, great.
And of course, I didn't know it at the time, but I get home very early 1982. I get this call on my answering machine. Hey, yo, Jim, give me a call. Sylvester Stallone. And I go, come on. somebody's putting me on, you know? You know, because we had this road manager who's Italian, and he did a pretty good Stallone, you know?
And you're thinking, and Sylvester Stallone is top of the world after the first two Rocky movies. He's just Hollywood huge.
And I love him. Karen and I were huge, huge fans. We even named our cat Rocky. I mean, I'm not making that up.
Yeah, cool.
You know?
Perfect.
And so finally Karen listens and said, Jim, that sounds like Stallone. And I go, all right. So I call him back. I said, this is Jim Peterick. Is this really Sylvester Stallone? Hey, Jimbo, call me Sly. You know, honest to God, I was gobsmacked.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? I said, what? You don't have a secretary? Well, no, you know, I just want to call you, man. You know,
wow,
love that song. I love that song, Poor Man's Son. Tony Scotti, your record company president, played it for me. That's the sound I want for my new Rocky III. Can you help me out?
Wow.
I said, is the Pope Catholic?
You know? And do bears, you know, yeah.
So I'll tell you, he sent us a rough cut of the first 3 minutes of the movie, which was the montage. And he made me go out and rent a giant Betamax Pro, you know, the size of a microwave oven. You know,
this is 1982, after all.
82. And I called up Frankie Sullivan, guitar player, Survivor, and we watched that first 3 minutes. And, you know, you see Mr. T rising up, and you see Stallone kind of getting soft doing Master Charge commercials.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And yet there was a song going at the same time. It was Another One Bites the Dust by Queen, you know, and
yeah.
It worked like a charm. So I'm going, what the? So I called Stallone back. Hey, Sly, you got a song. He said, oh, man, you know, Queen wouldn't let us use it.
Queen's famous for that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll tell you what, man, the best thing I ever heard in my life. I said, are you kidding? He said, no, you got to beat that one. I said, okay, no problem, Sly. So we turned the sound down, and I had my guitar around my neck, and I just started going, digga, 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 digga. And I saw the punches being thrown, and I was just trying to catch the chords with the punches. Bump, 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 bump.
Wow.
Bump, bump, bump.
Wow.
Bump, bump, bump. So if you watch the punches, they coordinate just about perfect with those slashes. And that was on purpose.
Wow.
And
good thinking. Good thinking, man.
Not bad, right?
Yeah.
So he gave us like 6 days to write it, record it, master it, and send it to him. Oh, no problem, man, you know?
And what else have you got to do, right?
Well, right. I mean, God made the universe in how many, 7 days or something?
So Six.
Oh, who's counting? Anyway, so we do that, and we go to the studio, and it's that first take, I knew we had, like you said, caught lightning in a bottle. It was just an amazing feeling. And we sent it to him, and he absolutely went bonkers. Loved it. Loved it.
As well, What's not to like? That's a fabulous song.
He said at the time, you just wrote a song that's going to outlive me and you.
Cool.
And
wow.
He might be right. But I'll tell you what, Frankie went out there. I got pneumonia at that point because I was working too hard.
Yeah.
And he helped Stallone, you know, sink it into the movie. And I tell you what, we went to the Hollywood premiere. And it was very exciting, but, I mean, Hollywood types, they're very jaded, and the song came on, and you hear a little titter of applause, and it's nice, but it wasn't until, like, 3 weeks later, I snuck into my LaGrange Theater right in my hometown, and I sat in the back row, and that song came on, the people stood up and cheered.
Oh, cool. That's
what I knew, we had a smash.
Wow. Wow, that is what a fabulous story. That's got everything. That's got star power. That's got drama. I mean, cool. Very cool story, Jim.
Thank you. I can't make that stuff up.
So, Jim, the success of Eye of the Tiger in Rocky, and you follow that up with a song for Rocky IV that I read somewhere, the song Burning Heat, always makes you think of heartburn. Now, come on.
Oh. No, Burning Heart always, that's why I didn't call it that initially. It sounds like heartburn.
Yeah.
You know, and Frankie goes, get out of town. Nobody's going to think of that. So anyway, we called it Burning Heart.
It's another great song, and it works so well with Rocky IV. But you continue to record 50-plus years as the Ides of March, and you guys are still in the studio and putting out new product, aren't you? You got a new album in the last year.
Yes, we did. August 2019, we put out Play On. It's, you know, a work of great passion and great excitement.
And we, some great guests, too, on there. Drop a few names for me.
Easily. Well, start with Mark Farner of Grand Funk. We wrote a song together called Swagger, which became our first video.
Okay.
Which did extremely well on, you know, social YouTube and Facebook.
Yeah.
We've got Bo Bice of American Idol fame, who actually sang Vehicle to the top of the charts in 2006.
That's so
after
cool.
After he won the number two position just under Carrie Underwood. He's on the record. We wrote a song together called Love or Something Like It. We've got Mindy Hebert, the absolutely gorgeous blonde sax player, who is just not only sexy and gorgeous, but one of the best people and best sax players we've ever known.
Great.
David Pack of Ambrosia, the voice of Ambrosia, who wrote all those great songs like You're the Biggest Part of Me and That's How Much I Feel. Just a sweetheart of a guy. And Joe Bonamassa, the guitar monster, is on this record.
Yeah. And Paul Schaefer, too.
Paul Schaefer, he played Vehicle almost every month on his Letterman show, so it was just great that he came in and helped us out.
That's awesome.
Tom Duty of the Crying Shames is on the record.
Another great Chicago band, yeah.
The Crying Shames were the Ides of March heroes. They were a little older than us, and if we weren't playing with them, we would even go just to see them, like at the Blue Village in Westmont.
Cool.
Or the Teen World's Fair. But anyway, the album is doing very well.
Great.
And, Kathy Richardson of Jefferson Starship is on the record, and the next single is going to be Blue Storm Rising.
Which is a very powerful song. That's an awesome song.
Oh, thanks, Dan. That's one of the ones that knocks them dead live as well.
Yeah.
Kathy's been joining us in some of the shows, which is really great.
Speaking of live, you obviously know the answer to this question. I know how much the Ides of March got paid for their very, 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 very first gig.
I do, too.
How much?
$25.
And what did you spend all that money on, Jim?
Ice cream sundaes. We went right to Frelux Ice Cream in Berwyn, and we got the biggest effing hot fudge sundaes, man. We were just celebrating our first show.
Jim, that's awesome. Listen, before I ask you the seven questions that I ask every guest, how do people keep up with the Ides of March? Social media, website, etc.
Right. TheIdesOfMarch.com. That's T-H-E, IdesOfMarch.com. JimPeterick.com. That's P-E-T-E-R-I-K. The official Jim Peterick Facebook page. The Ides of March Facebook page. And that's about it.
Pretty hard to miss you guys out there in social media land.
Yeah, we're a moving target.
Jim, as you already know, I ask every guest of the Dan Marcus Wax Museum seven questions at the end of the interview, and you have 1 minute to answer all seven, okay?
Holy crap, okay.
No explanations are necessary. You got 1 minute. Here you go. Your first question, your least favorite high school class?
Algebra.
Car you learned to drive in?
1964 Valiant.
Favorite board game?
Upwards.
Favorite movie?
Rocky III.
Favorite guilty pleasure?
Hot Fudge Sundays.
Where did your first boy-girl kiss take place?
In the alley in back of Larry's house with Karen.
And finally, song you wish would have been your hit?
God Only Knows by the Beach Boys.
Excellent. Jim, thank you so much. It has been a thrill to talk to you once again. Best wishes to you and the Ides of March. I know you continue to tour, and people can watch for you all over the internet. And thank you so much for taking the time to talk.
It's been a pleasure. You're a knowledgeable guy. I always enjoy talking to you, Dan. So
thank you, Jim.
Rock on, baby.
Same here. You be good to Chicago now, okay?
I got one more final sign-off. You ready?
Yes.
Great God in heaven, you know I love you. Ba-da-ba-ba-da-da.
I'm Dan Marcus. More interviews on the way. Please click follow or subscribe in order to get automatic notifications when I upload new material to the podcast. Also, there's a lot to hear and read and do at danmarcuswaxmuseum.com. And while you're at it, please find us on Facebook at Dan Marcus's Wax Museum. Once you find us, please like us and maybe share a couple of items with your friends. Thanks for your support of Dan Marcus's Wax Museum.